Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument, Acevedo versus Canterbury, Miss Mansouri.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Shanaz Mansouri, and I represent the appellant in this case, Edward Acevedo. Your Honor, Edward Acevedo asks this honorable court to reverse the district court's ruling granting judgment as a matter of law for the appellee, Officer Canterbury, and remand this case for a new trial. Mr. Acevedo presented two issues before the trial jury in this case. One was for excessive force. Two was for false arrest. The district court granted judgment as a matter of law for the appellee on both of these issues. The appellee has conceded that the judge erred in granting judgment as a matter of law on the false arrest claim, and therefore, the only issue that I will present this morning is the issue of excessive force.
The now, to get right to the point, that the excessive force issue must assume that there is some level of seizure, I would think, because otherwise it looks like a simple state battery claim. What's your federal constitutional theory on this particular show of force?
Your Honor, as you stated, it does require the showing of a seizure, and it's our position that Mr. Acevedo did meet that claim. In this case, 1983 protects individuals whose constitutional rights have been violated by somebody acting under color of law.
Yeah, but what was the seizure? That's the question.
Yeah, right. What's the seizure? I mean, do you think there's a seizure every time there's a bar fight?
No, Your Honor.
With a police officer?
No, and this was not a bar fight. In this case, Your Honor, the seizure was when Mr. Acevedo was punched by Officer Canterbury for no apparent reason without provocation.
Was there any indication that Officer Canterbury was trying to subdue Mr. Acevedo for purposes of bringing him into the station or to keep him anywhere other than just losing his temper and punching him?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Canterbury, after he punched Mr. Acevedo was not free to leave. He remained on the scene because he wanted to file a complaint against Officer Canterbury.
But that's his desire. That's not the officer. If he had not wanted to do that, is there any indication that he couldn't have just gotten up and walked off?
Your Honor, the minute he was punched by Officer Canterbury, who was acting under color of law, we contend that there was a seizure. Mr. Acevedo, at that point, was not free to get up and leave. A police officer cannot have a green light to attack somebody for no reason with the out that they can just walk away from it, and therefore the person does not have rights under 1983.
But why is it a federal constitutional right? I mean, nobody's saying this is good behavior, but why is it a federal constitutional problem?
Because Officer Canterbury was clearly working under color of state law. By his own admission, he was a police officer on duty in uniform, responding to the call as a police officer.
So you're saying any battery by a police officer in the course of duty is a Fourth Amendment violation?
Your Honor, yes, I am. And in this case, it's clear that Mr. Acevedo, without provocation, was punched by Officer Canterbury and then remained on the scene until a supervisor came to clear up what had occurred.
But suppose he'd punched him and Canterbury hadn't, or Acevedo hadn't fallen down. Would that be a seizure too?
Yes, Your Honor. We would contend that it would. A police officer does
not...
Well,
what if he just slapped him? Is that a seizure?
Your Honor, given the it would depend on the particulars of the circumstances.
Suppose everything's the same, except instead of knocking Acevedo down, Canterbury slapped him.
Yes.
So is that a seizure?
We would say that it is,
well,
Your Honor.
Well, aren't you doing a certain violence to the word seizure?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And the Supreme Court has held...
How is that a seizure? I don't understand.
Well, Your Honor, there are various definitions of a seizure.
Well, what if he spat at him? Would that be a seizure? That's a battery, too.
Sure. And we would
contend... That's a seizure.
We would contend that given all of the circumstances presented by Mr. Acevedo at trial...
No, that's not the point. The point is... You're not giving any weight to the term seizure.
To take it back to California against Hodari D, the Supreme Court has said physical force plus submission to the showing of authority, some sense that the person is being held, just to use a synonym, by the police officer. And I think what you're running up against is the fact that while we may think that it's very undesirable for the police to use force under color of law against people, you need to find a constitutional home for that, and there isn't necessarily a federal constitutional theory. Substantive due process, as you know, is extraordinarily limited in this area, and seizure should mean something like holding. I'm thinking Hodari D, for example, says that.
Right, and I am familiar with the case, Your Honor, and it does say that. However, the mere submission to an officer's show of authority to restrain a subject's liberty has also been considered enough.
Yeah, but where's the restraint? That's the problem.
Your Honor, Mr. Acevedo was not free to leave the scene. If Your Honors would say that Mr. Canterbury can just punch this individual and then have him remain there, but because he didn't physically...
Well, what if Acevedo was running away and the police officer threw his flashlight at him, hit him in the back, and he keeps running? Would that be a seizure? That'd be a battery.
I think that it would be a seizure.
But it certainly wouldn't be a restraint, right?
But it doesn't have to be a physical restraint.
Well, but you just said it was restraining him was the bad thing that happened.
Your Honors, it does not have to be a physical restraint. It can be a submission.
No, but in my example, there's no restraint of any sort.
Right, but the mere hitting him with a flashlight would be considered excessive force because
yes,
he's submitting.
But not a seizure, not a restraint. It's not interfering with his locomotion.
Right, and... Your Honors, I will probably save the rest of my argument for rebuttal if that's all right.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mansouri. Mr. Layton? Ms. Layton, sorry.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, the District Court entered judgment on both Mr. Acevedo's false arrest and excessive force claims.
Could you raise your voice, please?
Sure, Your Honor. I'm not intending to address the false arrest claim this morning. I focus my remarks exclusively on the excessive force claim.
I have a question for you about that, which is, it stems from the fact that you agree that this case needs to go back, and since we review judgments, you know, we would be reversing the judgment of the district court and sending the case back. And if you agree that what happened was a state law battery, my question is why that claim doesn't fit within the supplemental jurisdiction of the federal court to entertain related state law issues.
Well, Your Honor, there may have been a state law battery that occurred when Officer Canterbury struck Mr. Acevedo. However, there's a statute of limitations on that claim.
Well, but why wouldn't it relate back? It's just a change of theory under Rule 15C on remand. Why wouldn't it relate back? It's the same defendant. It's the same transaction and occurrence. There's been notice all along that this is what's being complained about. I'm not sure that there's necessarily a statute of limitations problem.
Well, if that's the case, Your Honor, then there may in fact be a state law claim that Mr. Acevedo could raise, but that does not allow the court, that does not allow the excessive force claim to survive.
Sure, no, I understand. I'm just trying to think the next step ahead. I think that the problem, as we were discussing with the excessive force claim, is this concept of seizure if there is no submission of any kind, although he was lying on the street. I mean, maybe there was de facto submission to authority because this was such a strong punch that it caused him to fall down?
Well, Your Honor, I would direct this court's attention to this court's decision in McCoy versus Harrison. And that case has facts that are extremely comparable to this situation. In that case, the plaintiff was knocked to the ground by the defendant's use of force. And, in fact, the defendant then reached down and grabbed the plaintiff's arm and dug his fingernails into her arm. This court, however, held that that was not a seizure as understood under the Fourth Amendment, because not only is physical force in and of itself is not sufficient, there had to have been a show of authority and restraint pursuant to that show of authority.
Well, there was, how much force is necessary for restraint in your view? Suppose an officer comes up to somebody and says, "You're a suspect in last night's burglary. It's time to administer the punishment." He pulls out his revolver and shoots him. He crumples to the ground and the officer walks away and says, "See you later." Any problem under the Fourth Amendment?
I believe
the officer hasn't taken him into custody. He's just shot him.
I believe there would be a problem in that situation, Your Honor. The officer was showing authority along with the physical force or the physical contact. In this case, there is no...
All right, now the officer keeps silent, comes up and just shoots him, says, "I'm Officer Smith." Bang! Without making any speech. Violation of the Fourth Amendment? Problem under the Fourth Amendment?
That is a closer case, Your Honor. I believe that in that case, there was no show of authority, that the purpose behind the officer's action...
"I am Officer Smith. This is my service revolver." Bang!
Well, he's simply announcing his presence as a police officer, but
is
just acting under
color of law. Is there any
reason
why Fourth Amendment analysis should turn on what the officer, on how much the officer says before he shoots?
No,
that
I don't.
That doesn't seem sensible.
No, I don't think that there is, Your Honor. I don't think that there is a reason to turn.
It's your argument that's making what he says rather than what he does dispositive.
Well, I'm sorry, Your
right?
Honor.
And of course the. As I understand your argument, if the officer shoots him in the torso and enables him to walk, so he can still walk away, that's not covered by the Fourth Amendment. But if he shoots him in the leg so that he can't walk away, it is covered by the Fourth Amendment. And I have a little trouble seeing why that would make any sense.
Well, Your Honor, the distinction we're trying to make is between not exactly where the physical force detained him, but as between what the officer's actions demonstrate. Was there, in fact, a show of authority that the officer was trying to make that would have restrained the plaintiff's actions? In this case, Mr. Acevedo's own testimony makes clear that Officer Canterbury there's no evidence that Officer Canterbury was using the force for the purpose of restraining.
Well, there's a purpose argument you're introducing to this, because Acevedo says that was such a strong blow that he was unable to leave the scene without medical attention. And, you know, maybe it was a punch rather than a firing of a service revolver, but surely an officer would know whether he's hit somebody so hard that he's going to fall to the ground and can't move versus spitting on them or something, which might be unpleasant but allows you to walk away.
Well, there might well have been a battery in this case, but that doesn't mean that there is an excessive force
claim. Well, but I'm trying to get it. There's batteries and batteries. There's a spitting on battery that would not in any way restrain your movement, and there's punching you so hard that you collapse to the ground and can't get up, which does restrain your movement.
But this court's decision in McCoy versus Harrison shows that physically punching someone or knocking them to the ground, the physical force in and of itself is not enough. Without a show of authority and restraint, submission to that show of authority.
Well, we know that there's a show of authority here, don't we, because of the concession that everything's under color of state law.
Well, I think that the show of authority asks slightly different question. It's not simply whether the defendant is acting under color of law, but whether the defendant's actions as they are acting demonstrate an intent to, in fact, restrain the freedom of movement.
Now I'm completely lost. The Supreme Court keeps saying over and over that the Fourth Amendment does not have any intent component, that that the analysis is utterly objective. I don't see how we can stick intent in it without just going against the decisions of our bosses.
Well, you're right, Your Honor.
Think about the barrier case where the police put the barrier across the road and the fleeing motorist runs into it. and he is stopped, would it make any difference whether there was a big sign on the barrier that said police or whether it was just a barrier? Actually, I think in the given case, the police put a truck across the road, and the truck didn't say police. So there was no show of police authority. There was just something sufficient actually to stop the motorist.
Of course, there was.
The court says that's a seizure.
There was submission to the court,
well,
to the show of authority
him.
In that case.
Stopped
right.
the motorist in his tracks, not
right.
voluntarily, involuntarily.
There must
so
be.
The claim is here, you get punched so hard you're knocked to the ground. You are stopped in your tracks.
Mr. Acevedo's,
you were driving, you were walking.
Mr. Acevedo's testimony was not that he was unable to get up and leave. He was knocked to the ground, but his testimony makes clear that he did not submit to the show of authority. He immediately stood up.
Well,
he walked around
case,
the car.
Look, in the roadblock case, the motorist did not submit to authority. He was just stopped. And that's the question here, and in my gunshot case. Is it enough to be stopped? Right, let me give you another version. The police come up to you and say, halt, you're under arrest, and they grab him. And he then breaks free from their grasp and runs away. He doesn't submit to their authority, and in fact, he escapes. Could he say, I was wrongly arrested, wrongly seized, even though he struggled free and ran away?
I would think no, Your Honor. I think that at that point, there may have been a seizure at one particular moment, but a seizure is not a continuing status. There must.
So he could not say, if he broke free, that I was seized without probable cause. Because
well,
in your view,
he did not submit to the show of authority in your example. He broke free and ran.
Now he's held for 2 minutes before he gets free? You know, I would think that you would be arguing, yes, he was seized, and indeed, therefore, getting free and running away was the crime of escape.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, Mr. Acevedo's testimony makes clear that he, in fact, was not submitting to any show of authority. The physical force knocked him to the ground momentarily, but he then got up, he walked away, and he, although he chose to remain on the scene, he was, in fact, free to go. Officer Canterbury even told him, get out of here, according to Mr. Acevedo's own testimony. Because he was not seized, he does not have a Fourth Amendment claim. Therefore, the district court's judgment with respect to the excessive force claim was correct. Unless there are any questions, we are intending to rest on our brief with respect to the judicial bias argument, and I will say nothing further as well about the false arrest claim.
Okay. So, thank you, Ms. Latham.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mansouri, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
Just briefly, Your Honor, in addressing some of the issues that Justice Easterbrook just brought up.
We're judges.
Counsel relies on McCoy several times. She mentioned McCoy is right on point, and we respectfully disagree. In McCoy, the inspector, first of all, left the scene himself. It could be argued that might not have been a seizure, but also, the inspector admitted that he was not working under color of law. I don't think that McCoy is on point in this case. In addition, if you look at U.S. versus Mendenhall, the Supreme Court has held that something as mere as a display of a weapon, a physical touching, or the use of language and or tone can constitute a seizure. And in this case, although Mr. Acevedo did get up, he had nowhere to go. The minute that Officer Canterbury punched him, Mr. Acevedo was seized. And therefore, because Officer Canterbury clearly showed authority, he admitted he was working on duty as a police officer and under color of law, and because Mr. Acevedo submitted to that show of authority, it's clear that he was seized. This counsel expects this court to create a loophole for police officers to merely be able to use excessive force or to batter an individual and then tell them, hey, walk away, buddy, and then have no liability under 1983. And that is not in the spirit and intent of Section 1983 when somebody's constitutional rights have been violated. We believe that the district court erred in granting judgment as a matter of law. on the excessive force claim of Mr. Acevedo because of all the reasons stated, and we would ask this court respectfully to reverse and remand this case for further proceedings. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Winston. Next case for argument, Fidelity National.